Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Global Village Radio Show on Blog Talk Radio with your host, Dr. Douglas James Cottrell, and co-host Doug Bentley. Tonight, special guest Robert Appel discusses the secrets of the ancient mythological Tartaria Empire, a vast region from Eastern Europe to Siberia and all the way to Central Asia. We'll hear about the times when this enormous nation possessed technological powers and was very advanced long before the Europeans arrived, but vanished from the face of the earth, much like Atlantis and Lemuria. We're also taking your phone questions about tonight's topic at 718-766-4421. That's 718-766-4421. Now, here's your Global Village Radio host, Dr. Douglas James Cottrell.
Welcome, my friends. It's a pleasure to be back with you this week. We have an exciting show tonight. We're going to take a look back at that place that is referred to as Tartaria and how it was a vast empire in the world. It started off basically as the Mughal Empire, which at the height was the largest continuous land empire in history. It often was associated with Genghis Khan, and in 1206, it was included large parts of Eurasia. Over time, it divided into the Greater Tartaria, the vast Siberian hinterland, and Lesser Tartaria, the region just east of the Caspian Sea, and Chinese Tartaria. Starting around the 16th century, the Russian tsardom, the Tsars, and later the Russian Empire gradually conquered these territories of Tartaria and incorporating them into their expanding Russian state. After a while, they kind of, by amalgamation of these various parts, the peoples and the nations gained recognition by their own specific names. And today, Tartaria's legacy can be seen in the Turkic and Mongolian peoples and cultures of Eurasia. However, Robert Appel is here tonight to give us the inside story of the ancient mythological Tartaria, more like the historical insider's view, as this particular landmass was the largest landmass known on Earth at that time as a continuous nation or country, although they don't prefer to call it a country, I understand. But again, they were way ahead of their time. They had, according to some researches we've done, they've had power devices, they had aqueducts, they were an advanced society. And so we are going to have a look tonight and get the inside scoop from Robert, who once again will give us an amazing account of the details of this ancient civilization. As you know, Robert is an authority of this. Robert is a published author. He's a researcher. He's a broadcaster. And he's been on the show a few times with us in the past. And he is a well-published and a well-known broadcaster. He's been in the movie business. He's a writer and has written several books. So I'm going to say welcome to the show, Robert. It's a pleasure to have you back tonight. And we're looking forward to you letting us know about Tartaria and this empire that seemingly to be so far advanced in the world that it's a wonder why it's disappeared. Welcome to the show, Robert.
Hi, Doug. Good to be here. Let's clarify that what you read out is, again, the official version of what happened mm-hmm. to the Tartarian Empire. Let me ask everybody a question before we jump in with both feet into the water, into the pool. Let me ask you a question. What would be the greatest marketing campaign, the most successful marketing campaign in known history? Anybody want to make a suggestion? You can say Apple. You can say anything you like. What would be the greatest marketing campaign ever? Let's define our terms. Let me just tell you, give you the criteria.
When Marco Polo came back from China.
What's that?
When Marco Polo came back from China, he told us about spaghetti and tomato sauce. So,
yeah, that's not bad, but he did them generically, so that to this day, and that's why I was going to identify the criteria, to this day you cannot identify one tomato sauce or one ice cream, in the case of Marco Polo, from another. It would have to be a product which is the same, exactly the same, with very, very small variations all around the world. It would have to be successful worldwide, and it would have to have, and this is the key, no competition. So can anybody, and I'm not trying to give you guys a hard time, but I'm making an important point so that we understand where we're going. Can anybody think of a product which is essentially the same worldwide, full market penetration worldwide, no competition?
Coca-Cola.
Okay. I see the sort of mind frame you're in. In the late 1600s, the Vatican commissioned a gentleman, Joseph Gallagher, we talked about this before but never in detail, to write a history of the world which they would then endorse. Of course, to successfully get the endorsement of the Vatican, his history of the world had to meet with their expectations, which you need to really think about that. Scaliger, if you look him up, S-C-A-L-I-G-E-R, I believe. Doug Bentley always can correct me if I'm wrong in that stuff. If you look him up, you'll see that he's also known as the father of the science of chronology. Well, chronology is important. I mean, you can't book your calendar or your dentist appointment or, you know, when to change the oil on your car unless there's some kind of chronology or science of chronology. So the church kind of commissioned him to write a history of the world, which they were comfortable with. And once they liked it and received it, they then spread it because they were the Vatican and they could do stuff like that back then. Within about 100 years, depending on which scholar you follow, and this is the key to where I'm going, every history book on the planet, whether it's Japanese, Danish and Denmark, Spanish and Spain, from Northern Europe right down to the tip of South America, every history book on the planet as taught in school is using Scaliger's history. That to me, and if you guys want to argue, you can go ahead, is the most successful marketing campaign in the history of the world because it's the same product with very, very small variations, same product all around the world, taught in every school curriculum in the world, regardless of language, translated, of course, and competition zero. Zero. Now, in a previous show, Doug Bentley and I talked about a Russian genius named Anatoly Fomenko, who is also a grandmaster, chess grandmaster, who years ago, he's not a young man anymore, but years ago he was doing research into some historical events. And one thing that he noticed was that the scribes, because that's what they were scribes, really. They didn't call themselves historians. They were scribes. They kept track of things. The scribes of old didn't have a standard calendar for the world. They knew that. They knew calendars changed and dates changed, and it was hard to get things standardized in days of old. So they would tend to record their events in terms of the constellations, in terms of the astrological, astronomical configurations at the time. And what Anatoly Fomenko noticed was that when he used modern computers to roll the heavens back, which basically these are computer programs, they've only been around for about 30 years, give or take, you can type any configuration in. I'm not an expert on astronomy, I admit that. Might be people out there who know a ton more than I do, but you can type any configuration you want. Something is squaring that, or Jupiter is over here, and the program, which is an available commercial program, will produce a date using modern chronology, or conversely, you can type a date into the program and it'll tell you what was going on in the heavens. What Anatoly Fomenko noticed about 20-odd years ago is that the dates didn't match. When he started looking at first-person accounts of historical events, well-known historical events, key events, events that you might want to call critical to the validity of the modern history they teach in school all over the world, the astronomical, I tend to mix those up. Astrology is more the effects of the planet on you. Astronomy is where the planets actually are. I think it's a good explanation. The astronomical data did not match. As a result of that, Mr. Fomenko started something called the History Project, which I believe is still going some 20 years later, where with a bunch of volunteer scholars. They're trying to re-examine as many historical events as they can using these computer systems to try and figure out when they actually happened. If you look up Flamenco, F-O-M-E-N-K-O, on the web, you'll find some of his results have been published in English and other languages. But the bottom line, regardless of which historical events fascinate you or don't fascinate you, the bottom line is they are producing convincing evidence that the history taught in the school all over the world, the history you're learning, the history your parents learned, the history your grandparents learned, and so on, is not correct. So we need to go into any discussion of legendary, mythological, lost civilizations with a grain of salt, because the one thing we now know, which we didn't know before, is the stuff that we think we know is probably wrong. So that gives us more of a blank slate, more of an open blackboard to work with. Okay, so now that we've established that, what do we know about Tartaria? And the answer is enough to be really intrigued, but not enough to determine exactly what happened. Back about 1,000 years ago, the historians, or the map makers and historians, were really, really strange guys. The way they lived their lives would be hard to imagine for someone today. If you were a map maker or a historian, or a map maker and historian, which often went hand in hand, or a map maker, historian, and anthropologist, again, often went hand in hand, you left the country or the city or the village where you came from, and you basically almost never went back. You went back maybe late in life. But you would travel, and most of these guys had serious sketching skills. They had some mathematical skills. And they would travel and travel, and every time they traveled to an area, they would make a map of it. They would sketch the people they met. They would interview the people they met. And they were the main source for putting together the state of the world. There was no internet. There was no radio. There was no TV. And Scaliger hadn't been born yet, so he hadn't done his history for the church. And this is another topic, and sometimes I say this, and it might be upsetting, but this is, you know, we only have so much time. Another topic for another show would be, why is it that the maps from long ago are more accurate than the maps from today? What's that all about? And there's a reason for that. But for most parts of the world, the older the map you look at, the more accurate it is. And we talked about that before, the Piri Reis map, which seems to show Antarctica, maps of California showing California as an island, so on and so on. Okay, so these guys, and there wasn't just one of them, a bunch of these guys traveling around, making their books, putting together their anthologies, drawing all these nice people they met, making their maps, they all agree that somewhere about 1,000 years ago, there was an empire, not a city, not a village, not a state, not a province, not a country, an empire called Tartaria, which to the best of their understanding stretched from approximately where France is now all the way across to Mongolia, which includes, of course, the official version. I know that you're reading Wikipedia, that I think that's where you got that from, down to China, down to Japan. If you talk to experts on Japan, there are photos, very hard to find photos of the very first samurai. They are not Asian. They're Occidental. They're white. I had a Japanese friend years ago, and she told me that if you are Japanese, you know that. You don't talk about it, that the original inhabitants of Japan were white. And it goes all the way across again, and it apparently they had branches of their empire even extending into North America, Central America, and South America. And we'll get back to that. They were an empire. Two flags, not just one. They had culture. They had holidays. They were the whole enchilada. And all we know about them is from the stories and sketches and interviews from those old historians, traveling historians, and from a few books that survived that actually were apparently Tartarian and were sketches, engravings, if you like, woodcuts, perhaps you would say, of some of their festivals and so on. And those are fascinating. And you can look all this up online. There's a lot of videos in the last 10 years. During their festivals, the Tartarians had what they call lightning swords or electric swords, same thing. And they were able to harness lightning from the sky, like what's his name, Benjamin Franklin, was it, who put the key up in the air? They were able, the same way we do fireworks today for our festivals, they were able to harness lightning, their sketches of this, and bring them into their sword and create sparks. They should not have been able to do that. By no stretch of the imagination should they have had the technology or the know-how to do that, but there's a lot of things they should not have been able to do, which apparently they were able to do. So that's seen in some of the engravings. They were peaceful. They got along with everybody. They didn't have an enemy in the world. There was prosperity. They encompassed many different ethnic types. Everybody got along. Even the religious emblems seem to combine early Christianity with early Islam. Again, I'm not a religious expert. I'm just saying these are actual things you can see for yourself if you look at the old woodcuttings and engravings of the last remaining pictures in Tartaria. So also, the theory is that the electric swords they had, that wasn't accidental and that wasn't coincidence. It's a lot like the stories, if you remember from earlier shows we did, where some of the cultures of South America, like the Maya, it's claimed they never invented the wheel. Yet on little children's toys that were found from the remnants of the Mayan Empire, they have wheels on the children's toys. So the question becomes, well, if they understood the wheel to put it on a children's toy, why would they not use it for themselves? The same with the Tartarian lightning swords. If they could create electricity for their festivals by pulling it down from the sky, and this is clearly delineated in multiple pictures, if they could create electricity by pulling it down from the sky, why wouldn't they use electricity for things day to day? Well, that's an interesting question. And the aspect of the Tartarian Empire, which is even more controversial, like what I've just told you is probably controversial enough, is that they also extended their empire into buildings in North America, South America, and Central America. And the buildings they built were of incredibly solid construction, not exactly the polyagonal construction, block construction that we associate with some of the megalithic cities, not that type, but the buildings were modern-ish looking and solid as a rock because they were built from rocks. They were built from the hardest material available in each area. In fact, it is argued that most of the really, really old buildings in the United States that are now used as city halls and so on were already there when the settlers came over. It is argued that the most complicated aqueducts that are in Central America, around Mexico, and in the United States, which require, if you look at the pictures of them, these are still in existence today. The aqueducts in the United States, Central America, and even South America, require monstrous amounts of engineering skill and monstrous building skill, and they were already there when these areas were settled. What you were told in the official history books, and again, you'll have to research on your own because what I'm saying sounds fantastical and insane, but I'm telling you this is what it is. I've done 100 hours at least on this. The official story of where these aqueducts and buildings came from is that they were there when they were built by the missionaries and the early settlers. So you have to imagine a missionary leaving from Europe, probably Italy, with a shirt on his back and his big box of books or whatever else he took, or the settlers taking their precious possessions and getting on the ship to travel across to the New World, and somehow also bringing a full-fledged army of engineers with them to build these incredible constructions. They were all, I'd emphasize this again, nobody in the modern age has taken credit for these aqueduct structures and similar structures because they were already there when people arrived. A lot of the buildings in the major cities in the U.S., which are unknown construction, meaning, again, they were already there when people arrived, also had statues outside them, which were of Roman gods. Sounds crazy. There are actual pictures available because they had photography at this time. There are actually pictures available. They were all knocked down. No explanation for that either. The style of construction of the buildings, which exist all through South America, Central America, and North America, and even, by the way, in Asia, the oldest buildings in Japan were not built by the Japanese. They never took credit for that. What all these buildings have in common, aside from the fact they're all made of stone, they're all built to last thousands of years, they're incredibly tough, is that the style of building In the official books, the official narrative for the style of building for all these mystery buildings is Greco-Roman. Greco-Roman, to people in the know, has become a catch-all term for we don't know who made it. The same way if you're involved in the medical field or the holistic health field, you would already know that if you look up the official explanation for most diseases, 90% of the diseases known to modern medicine are listed in the official books, textbooks, manuals, Merck manuals, as idiopathic, which is Latin for we don't know. We don't know the cause. And when you talk about all these incredibly old buildings at the heart of all these cities all over the world, which look exactly alike, and you see they're all called Greco-Roman, no, they were not built by the Greeks and Romans, because the Greeks and Romans didn't go around the world building aqueducts and buildings. They're just called Greco-Roman because we don't know who built them. So what I've just given you is just a teaser as to where the Tartarian mystery starts.
Okay.
You don't have a conclusion to it. There are people on the Internet who are actively exploring. They're doing videos. There are thousands of pictures online. If you look up YouTube, Tartaria, you can easily download right away, 50 hours of pictures and stuff of things that make no sense, buildings that make no sense. Most of the Tartarian architecture, which we know from buildings that still exist, although they've been adjusted or trimmed, if you like, and from the pictures we have from before, have spirals or antennas on the top, very similar to church spirals. They all have it, not most, really pretty much everyone has, which raises the question, if you have a mystery civilization that apparently understood the principles of electricity, which they did from their electric swords, again, you can look that up, and why did they have spirals in all their buildings? Well, from the buildings that still exist, which we associate with Tartaria, Russia, by the way, I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, where did all the stuff go? Who owns it now? When the Tartarian Empire was destroyed, and there's no question it was destroyed, they chased down all the royalty, they chased down all the decision makers, and they killed them if they could find them, and the rest went into hiding. This is pretty much known. Most of the spoils went to Russia. Most of the old empire went to Russia. But all the countries involved in what used to be Tartaria and is now Europe and Asia, they all got their piece of the pie. But the buildings still exist because they were built so well. If you look at the pictures, original pictures of these buildings where they still existed, in the individual living quarters, which of course what buildings would have, the fireplaces are beautiful, ornate, solid, but they're not big enough to contain coal or wood. They're really small, like a little bigger than maybe a portable oven. They're not big at all, and they all have some kind of metal. The older pictures show a metal plate at the back, which some kind of wire-looking thing, which seems to connect to the antenna on the roof. So the question then becomes, is it even possible that they understood the principle of pulling electricity from the air, as they did for their swords, to somehow heat the rooms in their apartments? I mean, now we're getting into something that's almost crazy. But is it crazy? And this is the last thing I want to leave with you with as a teaser. I know I've been going on for a while. We all know the name Nikola Tesla. No, he's not the guy that started the Tesla car company because that's just borrowing his name. He's the guy that developed a zillion inventions that were great inventions, including, by the way, alternating current. He was in a battle during his lifetime with Thomas Edison, who was not considered, according to the experts today, Tesla was 100 times smarter than Edison. Edison kept arguing that direct current was the way to deliver power to the houses. If we had gone that route, you wouldn't have the power transmission we have around the grid today. Direct current is not an efficient way of conducting power. Mm-hmm. Alternating current is, and that was Tesla. Tesla, and look this up, please, don't take my word for it. In the early 1920s, Tesla not only was driving around the New York area, because that's where his lab was, with an electric car. You're thinking, wow, that's not bad, electric car, Tesla, what a coincidence. He not only was driving a modified Pierce Arrow, which he himself modified, but according to newspaper reports of the day by credentialed newspaper reporters, that his modified Pierce Arrow not only ran on electricity, it had no internal source of power. He was pulling it directly from the sky, which is what he claimed. The reason Tesla started off as a genius, backed by some of the biggest financiers of that era, Westinghouse, the original Westinghouse, as in Westinghouse air conditioning and stoves and all that stuff. The original Mr. Westinghouse was one of his big backers. All his backers abandoned him after he made fortunes for them with the invention of power generators and AC current. They all walked away from him. Now, why would they do that? Why would you walk away from the goose that is laying the golden eggs? Because his obsession was that, and I'm quoting a famous quote from Tesla, he said, the Earth is like a giant battery. The planet is like a giant battery. He said, it is possible to pull electricity directly from the sky wireless power. It's up there. All you have to do is harness it. And he was in the process of building a tower, which you can still see pictures of, again online if you go and look up a biography. You can still see pictures of the tower he built to demonstrate to his backers how you could create wireless power, no electric wires needed, to pull current directly from the sky and then broadcast it out. And apparently he did experiments where you could turn on lights and all kinds of stuff at a distance with no wires. And this is when his backers, who he had made rich beyond your dreams, said, Mr. Tesla, your days are over. You're going to die a pauper. We're going to have you arrested, blah, 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 mm-hmm. blah, because we don't give anything away for free, and you should understand that by now. So I go back to the question I asked before. Did the Tartarians understand what Tesla understood? Is that why the fireplaces and their buildings were so small? Okay, that's where we start. Sorry, Doug.
Well, on that note, let's take a break. We'll be right back. And my good friend and co-host, Doug Bentley, a retired educator, a researcher, and again, the co-host here tonight. As always, we'll be here and probably to grill Robert with a couple of penetrating questions on the Tartar Empire and what happened to them. We'll be right back after this short break.
One of the most poignant topics of discussion in today's world is the evidence of earthly changes and what began as what the media called global warming. Did you know our Global Village host wrote the most detailed predictive book about the future of our planet? The New Earth is a book that drills down to specific events, many of which have already come true. But much more than severe weather patterns, seismic eruptions, the New Earth tells us how to prepare and understand how societies and governments will be forced to accommodate these future events. Originally published as The New Renaissance, the updated manuscript is one of Dr. Douglas Cottrell's best-selling books. Pole shift, coastal and inland changes, volcanoes and earthquakes, rising temperatures, specific landmass changes, healing our emotional health during these changes, and so much more. Go to DouglasJamesCottrellStore.com. That's DouglasJamesCottrellStore.com for immediate access to your printed copy of The New Earth.
You think about you and your family's health every minute, every day, not just when sick. We believe healthcare should bring results and rejuvenate the body. That's why Dr. Douglas James Cottrell compiled some of his best tips from his readings into a book, The Complete New Age Health Guide, Volume 1. From nutrition, anti-aging, and skincare to serious disorders and diseases like autism, PTSD, and cancer. Find out more at DouglasJamesCottrellStore.com or buy a copy on Amazon today.
Did you know that Dr. Douglas Cottrell has several other weekly channels where you can participate? Check out his Sunday International Spiritual Healing Service on Zoom, plus a Wednesday night Zoom community gathering. And you might also enjoy the Wake Up podcast exploring human consciousness, awareness, and intuition with Dr. Douglas and co-host Les Hubert. Just go to DouglasJamesCottrell.com and message us on the contact page to add your name to the Zoom links of your choice. You're listening to the Global Village International Radio Show with your host, Dr. Douglas James Cottrell. Call in and ask a question about tonight's topic at area code 718-766-4421. That's 718-766-4421. Now, once again, here's Dr. Douglas James Cottrell.
Welcome back to the show, my friends. My good friend and co-host Doug Bentley standing by, and Robert has covered the map here with gone over the most important aspect of this Tartaria, a landmass that stretched from France to China to Japan and I guess beyond. Its technological achievements were extensive. There's evidence of them. They were somewhat absorbed into Russia, their artifacts and machinery or valuable aspects of their civilization were, again, let's say, transported over to Russia. And as well, the people, like all civilizations, the people at the top, the leaders, politically, educational, religious leaders perhaps, were were removed from the country, and it was just dissolved and disappeared. And the question is, why? This civilization seemed to be very far advanced, and they also seem to be very spiritual and educated and have a good sense of justice. I wonder if they had a standing army. I wonder if they were, you know, predatory in their expansions of this continent. Or maybe it was, as Robert is mentioning, they had unlimited sources of power. Wouldn't that be the one thing to bring peace into our world? If everybody had electrical power to generate all their needs and to provide all the physical comforts, what kind of civilization we would be having now if we had all these aspects. Douglas, before the show, we were looking forward to Robert being on the show, and you might have a question or two for him tonight.
This is a very superficial question. Is there any indication, Robert, of the time frame or in terms of the conventional chronology when the dissolution of Tartaria took place? And who was responsible? Is there any indication of that?
The answer is no, but the key word in your question was conventional. There is an argument that a lot of the history we have, I know this, I'm thinking to myself, if I was out there listening to me, I'd think I was crazy. So this is inhibiting me a bit.
Not at all.
This information
well, I don't,
is,
Robert, so you can talk to me, okay?
Okay. If in fact the Flamenco Project is correct, and if in fact the postulate that the Scaliger history was deliberately, for whatever motive, messed up, what we think of as, there could be a huge chunk of time, hundreds of years, which are called maybe the Dark Ages or the Middle Ages or whatever, that weren't there at all. So you would end up, and this is a theory Flamenco himself had come out with, you would have to compress time a bit and move everything up more to the present. But even with that, the most likely way to pinpoint the demise of the last remnants of the Tartarian Empire, much like, by the way, if you were discussing Atlantis, you would want to talk about the last remnants of the Atlantean Empire. I was listening, and this is one of my, I have a habit of going off topic for a second or two, but I was listening to a very knowledgeable scholar on Atlantis, and you know, I've been working on that topic for most of my life. Doug and I were involved in the 1980s in Los Angeles with a script on that. But the gentleman who was talking about Atlantis, he was very stern with his audience because he was tired of the misunderstandings, and I get that as well. People keep thinking Atlantis was an island, it was a little country, it was a city. It was an empire, just like Tartaria. The best source to date, even 100 and some years later, because most of the material left by Edgar Cayce was done between 1890 and 1945, even now the most authoritative material in Atlantis from Cayce talked about the fact it was at least a 70,000-year empire, and that over that 70,000 years, the Earth, our Earth, the planet you're standing on right now, or you could be sitting, underwent incredible changes. And what started off as a landmass empire eventually ended up as a few scattered islands by the year 10,500 BC, give or take. So if you were talking about Atlantis, you would talk about the remnants of Atlantis and probably be more correct. To talk about Tartaria, the remnants of Tartaria, whatever was left of it, were obliterated somewhere around the middle 1700s. There was a lot of strange stuff going on in the 1700s. I don't usually use expressions like that. I don't usually like to make a point about how little I know, but I would say most of the people on this planet don't really understand what happened then. We have evidence of something astonishing happening to the planet, which liquefied the ground that everybody was standing on. There are buildings from that period in the 1700s. There are buildings all around the world still present today where the ground level, think of ground level is where you walk into the front door of your house or go into the main door of a building. Ground level, the buildings are no longer at ground level. Ground level is now the second floor. Something liquefied the ground buildings were on, obviously did that to the whole town, the whole city, the whole village, and all the buildings literally like in molasses or quicksand, they sunk into the ground. And these buildings still exist today, and there were hundreds of really excellent pictures of this from cities, ancient cities all over the world, where the entrance is now on the second floor. So a lot of really weird stuff happened in the 1700s. You had the orphan train phenomenon, which again has been erased from history and is never discussed among civilized people, where all around the world there were so many orphans. Where did these orphans come from? Where did all these kids come from? That they had to organize charities. This is not just in Europe, but also in North America and South America. They had to organize institutions to ship these kids to new parents wherever they could. There were literally something called orphan trains. You can put that into Google and Google it. And this is because the parents of the kids, they say that the parents of the kids couldn't provide for them. Well, that makes no sense at all. We're talking about hundreds of thousands of kids. So obviously something had happened to the parents, or there were massive death. But to answer your question, there were some very, very strange things going on in the 1700s, which even today we're not completely clear about. This would be a super topic for our friend who knows somebody who does readings on lost historical facts. I'm not going to mention any names, but it'd be an incredible topic to go into, because I can say to you with a lot of confidence, there is nobody right now on this planet doing YouTube videos, writing about it, who seems to have all the answers, and there's a lot of pieces missing. But the last remnants of Tartaria were wiped out somewhere in the early 1700s, around 1750, somewhere in there.
Now, these people, these leaders of those who were responsible for the end of Tartaria, they obviously would be aware of the technology. Now, it seems unlikely that they would have simply destroyed everything. So somewhere there should be evidence, probably hidden, that the technology did exist. Because I know that you look at ancient Egypt, I'm very interested in ancient Egypt, and many of the things you see there give evidence of very advanced technology, of which we have no knowledge.
The answer to that question is a good question. There are people, in fact, who are doing research just on that, and they all seem to agree. They seem to agree that not only did the general Tartarian buildings have antenna or spirals on them, but that a certain number of buildings were not just the normal buildings, but were actually involved in the generation or collection of the energy, which was then distributed to the neighboring buildings through the antenna. They also agree that over the course of change, you know, the old saying that the victors write the history books, the buildings that are now best known as churches, most over the ancient world, were not originally churches, but were some kind of power generation stations. And I can't do, the explanation is long-winded and involves how energy is collected, how you would convert electricity from a collection to something you can work with. And it basically argues that if you look at the bell towers in most of the old buildings that are considered Tartarian, there was some technology in there. Most of them are empty now, which is very unusual. You think if they originally had a bell in the bell tower, there'd be a bell there still now. But the oldest Tartarian buildings that are still existent, the bell tower has been completely wiped clean. And, of course, if you had spirals and antennas and you look at the way churches are built with that dome, that would be the first place the energy collected from the sky would go to. So when you talk about missing technology, it seems by common agreement by the victors, by the people who shut Tartaria down, that whatever was in those towers, and people have actually gone through hundreds, if not thousands, of old pictures of old cities trying to pinpoint it, and they've only found one or two where there's still something in those bell towers. Of course, they're not bells. They kind of look like crystals or chandeliers. They're very strange. They're definitely not a bell. They're some kind of, if you're into ham radio or electronics, you would think with some kind of technology. So whatever was there that used the grid or used the antenna system is deliberately dismantled and taken down. The one thing that the victors did not want to do was release free power to the world. And that tells you, in a way, who might be behind what happened to Tartaria. Because it's the same mindset which shut Tesla down and made him die a pauper. Tesla died in disgrace, a pauper, because he was completely ridiculed and censored and deplatformed and all the modern words you can think of by the same people he had made millions of dollars for, because he kept insisting he wanted to bring wireless power to the world. So the same mindset behind the destruction of Nikola Tesla would be the mindset behind organizing the revolution that took out the last remnants of Tartaria.
Go ahead, Doug. What supports a lot of what you say is the majority, in my opinion, and from the research I've done, the majority of the ancient churches and cathedrals, particularly in Europe, are positioned on top of where ley lines cross. So they had some knowledge of earth energies, at the very least.
Well, that knowledge, that sacred knowledge, is the knowledge of the wisdom keepers. Goes back millennia, not just centuries. This is what's been passed on. If you go back to the Celtics in northeastern Europe, northwestern Europe up to Ireland, this is lost knowledge. And of course, they also had. It looks like glass. I'm trying to find the right word for it. A lot of the old churches have, in the main body of the church, have things hanging, like glass crystals hanging all through the, they're not lights. They're not lights that light up in any way, but they're there. And nobody seems to know what the function of them was. There is technology in what is now considered the old churches, which we know virtually nothing about. And that's an easy statement to make. I think that's a statement most people would agree with. We don't quite know what they were getting at, but it's there and it's in all of them. So, yeah, I think you're onto something.
Well, I think you were mentioning something many years ago about this tomb that was opened and there was a light still shining.
The legend of the lights that burn forever is one simple example of a lost technology. I first encountered that as a teenager when I started researching all this stuff. This is before the internet, when you had to actually buy books. Well, there's something for listeners at home.
What are they? What are they, Robert?
Carefully folded forest is what books are. What we found, people today, kids today, they should know, but they don't, because we don't pay attention to this stuff, that the largest store of knowledge in the world, the library with the most preservation, the most preserved books, was the Alexandrian Library. It was known all around the world as the store of knowledge. And unfortunately, somebody got, I'm being a little facetious, but some people got mad at it and burnt it, and leaving aside the possibility that some books are rescued and moved to the Vatican Library, that's another show we can get into, it's pretty much gone. Now, the beauty of that is you're thinking, well, what good is it to talk about things that we can't do? I mean, why mention books that don't exist? Because the great scholars of the early Greek period did something which even kids today in high school and university do. They created bibliographies to their writings. So what did survive from the period of, let's say, the first century AD or even the first century BC, what did survive from that period are the bibliographies of the greatest writers of all time, at least of that period. And a lot of these writers were talking about scientific things, and their bibliographies refer to books they referenced in the Alexandrian Library. So we have, and I realize I'm getting very technical and very specific, but you have to do that. Nothing else is like a detective story. You got to find the clues where you can. We do have the references of the names of the books they used doing their research on mysteries from that, because that survived. Those manuscripts survived. And the writings that were scientific, and I got this from the work of I mentioned this before on the show, Dr. Raymond Drake, PhD. He's long deceased now. He died in 1980, I think. But he wrote 10 or 15 books on this, did incredible research, and his research was phenomenal. He went back and looked at the bibliographies of the greatest Greek and writers of the period, or writers or historians or researchers, and he found the most bizarre book titles you've ever heard of. Lost Science. One of them was called, I remember, this is from when I was a kid in the 1960s, one of the bibliographic references was Forever with No Heat. That was an actual book that a Greek scholar had found in Larbe Alexandria, and he quoted from it in his paper, but the book is gone. Lights that burn forever with no heat. You get the impression, if you are open-minded, that this was not a sophisticated technology. It was commonplace at one point in history. Just the technology for it is gone. And, because my memory just got jogged, Doug Kochel once did a reading on that 100 years ago. Sorry, Doug, not 100 years ago, maybe 30 years ago, where you explained how that would be possible. It had to do with the material that was used to make the light, and it was cold light, and it really, if it was done properly, it would burn almost forever unless you messed it up or gave it too much oxygen. But you actually did a reading on that at one point saying that it was one of those technologies. They had the legends around the area of the Giza Plateau talked about some early finds when they tried to dig in before the whole area got wrapped up. You know that the Egyptian government has been accused of taking artifacts out of it and selling them and so on. And even the curator of the Giza Plateau, Zawi Hawass, he lost his job, if I'm not mistaken, or was demoted because he was caught doing things with artifacts he should not have been doing. But the legends, going back several hundred years of the early caliphs and so on from the area, talked about lights that would burn forever and iron that would not rust. Those are two things associated with the lost mysteries of the Great Pyramid, lights that would burn forever and iron that would not rust. There is somewhere, if you Google it, there's somewhere on the planet, I'm trying to remember where it is, an obelisk or a spire made of iron. I think it's in India. There's
it's
a spire,
in India. It
a
is in India, yes.
A sacred spire has been there forever. Yes. It's exposed to the elements. There's not a spot of rust on it. So this is a form of metal which we've lost the ability to produce.
Well, that what you're saying in terms of cold light would explain how in the Valley of the Kings, the tombs there, very intricate designs, huge tombs, there were no
scorch marks
or ash marks on the ceiling, so they did not use torches.
Yeah, no, there's no question they had advanced. Well, some of the, it's only in our lifetime, Doug, yours and mine, that some brave people have come forward, particularly, I just forgot his name, it starts with a D. There's that engineer who was credentials out the butt. I mean, this guy is expert at machining, at tool marks. He is a world expert. And he looked at some of the cuttings of the blocks in the old Egyptian buildings, not just the Great Pyramid, but some other areas, Saqqara, the underground or the flooded. There's a flooded, very, very ancient monument, which is only accessible certain times of year. And he looked at some of the incredible drill marks and tool marks and some of the holes that were bored in, like with a Black & Decker saw going through plastic, and he went out on a limb and he said flat out, this is technology not only advanced to a high degree, but some of these things we could not do today. We do not have the technology today to manipulate some of the hardest stone in the world, which is this rose quartz and some of these other things, granite. We do not have the technology today to do what they did with these stone blocks. I'll think of his name later. Maybe you'll know who I'm talking about. But he was one of the first to come forward in the 1990s, and now a number of others have come forward as well. So the Egyptians, the ancient Egyptians, the dynastic Egyptians, had, in my opinion, it's a very clear, unlike the Tartarian thing, which we're still trying to figure out, it's very clear that the dynastic Egyptians, and this is in the Casey readings, inherited the last remnants of Atlantean technology and took it to the different outposts around the world where they had built kind of emergency settlements, and Egypt is one of them. And they brought with them a certain degree of technology, which, of course, they used. By the way, I just want to mention, because people are people, and as Doug likes to say in his sessions, people, as you know, people. Humanity really hasn't changed in a long time, and we're very pig-headed in many respects. One of the major problems, we're trying to determine what's actually going on in Egypt, and, because it's such an easy place to access. It's right there in our front of our eyes. You would think they'd be friendly and open-minded. No, they're not friendly and open-minded at all. From day one, the Egyptian government, in our lifetime, that's in the last 100 and some years, has taken the point of view This is incredible. If you don't know this, I'm just going to make it really plain. The Egyptian government has taken the point of view for the last 100 years that the idea that they would have had to inherit technology from some lost culture that was more sophisticated than their ancestors is abhorrent to them. And they will do everything in their power, including ban you from exploring and kick you out of the country for making that suggestion, because their attitude is whatever technology was used to build those monuments and those tombs and underground cities and all the rest of it was their ancestors working industriously to create it, and if they didn't need any help from anybody. I'm not going to comment on that. I'm just going to say that that argument is not conducive to finding out what actually happened and where these technologies came from.
I would agree wholeheartedly with you on that issue. Douglas, you were going to ask a question. We'll make a comment.
You covered it. I was going to ask about pyramid power. Robert, you were talking earlier in the day when we were setting up the show about all over Tartaria there were pyramids. Obviously, they stretched. The land mass has not changed. It's just the name and maybe some lines on a map. But the earth has not changed and has speckles or a pyramid spread out all over this area. Do you think that was would be with the same as Doug was alluding to earlier? That maybe that's the source of this, as you said, Tesla referred to the planet as a battery. There's all these little toys out there.
Unquestionably.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I can't prove it. I've only been spending my entire life on it, trying to. As I said, I started looking at Atlantis in the 60s, and tried to work on a more aggressively in the 80s, and I've been at it my whole life. I've kept up with all the stuff that's coming out on the net. In my opinion, 100% certainty, the Atlanteans understood how to pull power out of a number of different ways. We see some of these references in the ancient books, particularly the Indian books. I've said on previous show that if you had to pick a country in the world which has had the least amount of obstruction and the least amount of damage done to its most sacred texts, I'd probably pick India. For some reason, maybe because they seemed so incredible, because they seemed so fantastical, but they left them alone. Anybody with moderate intelligence and an open mind who looks at the sacred books of India, the Mahabharata and Ramayana, and these are poems that have thousands of verses. Many of the verses are technical manuals on how to use equipment, how to generate energy from spinning mercury, how to combine magnets. It's all in there. And as I mentioned on a previous edition of this show, the scandal when India was about to gain its independence, prior to India getting its independence from Britain, the British announced to the Indian scholars that their finest translators, and at that point in time, British translators were considered the leading academics, on that topic in the world, they announced to the Indians that their best translators were going to translate into English both those books, the Ramayana and Mahabharata, and the Indian scholars were delighted. They were just dancing on air. This is the nicest thing you could have done for them. Of course, you've already conquered them. They're already a little testy, but still the nicest things you could have done. They were so looking forward to it. When the official British translations, English translations, came out in the first British editions of the English language versions of the Ramayana and Mahabharata, hundreds of stanzas, hundreds of passages were omitted from the translation, and the British scholars had put into brackets, instead of translating a section, they put in brackets, religious gibberish, religious gibberish, religious gibberish. So those same Indian scholars went from elation and pride, as you can imagine, to testiness. And one of the very first things done by the independent country of India after the British released it from their empire was the best scholars in India retranslated the two books into English, this time not omitting anything. So you'd have to look at one of the Indian translations to find all the instructions as to how to fly your Vimana, which is a lighter than aircraft, in the air using a Mercury engine, how to spy on your enemies, while hovering in the air, how to fire weapons at your enemy, which if the enemy is exposed to the weapon, his hair and nails will fall out. If you get exposed to that weapon yourself, you should go into a river and try and bathe, etc., 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 etc. I mean, it's just...
Well, go ahead, Robert.
No, I was just saying, the amount of history that has been hidden from us or concealed is mind-boggling. And I'm just thinking to myself, if I'm having trouble with it, and I'm doing this my whole life, it must be unsettling to anybody listening. But I'm saying it's worth the investigation. It's worth digging around. What you'll find is it just the world is much more complicated than you thought.
Oh, but, you know, what's consistent with what you said is there is a passage which you alluded to in which there's a very accurate description of a nuclear explosion and
yep.
the subsequent radiation. And you said, and they would have to wash themselves in water. They spoke about your skin burning, your skin falling off, all the radiation poisoning symptoms. And thousands of years ago.
This is doubly confirmed. There is one city or area of India, can't remember the name off the top of my head, but even today, thousands of years later, it has radiation counts so dangerous that people don't go, it's a dead city. And it's been
wow.
off limits for a while because whatever hit that city in the distant past left radiation everywhere. And when Oppenheimer, who's credited as the creator of the atomic bomb in 1945, when he released the technology to the U.S. government, he quoted from, well, I'm not sure because I'm not an expert, it would be either the Ramayana or Mahabharata, but he quoted an actual sentence from it saying, "I'm created destroyer of worlds." He was quoting directly from a sacred text, alluding to the fact that he felt he was recreating something that had already been used on this planet.
Well, on that note, let's take a short break, and we'll go to the phones when we come back. We have people standing by in the 760, the 312, 773, 917, and the 773 again. Let's take a short break, Paul. We'll be right back after this, and we'll go to you, our listeners. The number to call is 718-766-4421. We'll be right back after this.
Every so often, an individual appears who can demonstrate the ability to access the dimension known as the Akashic Field. Dr. Douglas James Cottrell is one such individual. The field is like a celestial library of all our thoughts and actions. Since the dawn of time, science is demonstrating that through this energetic field, our minds are connected to one another despite our perception that we're all separate. This is why the great religions of the world teach respect, compassion, and tolerance. They depict the field as the book of life, the source of inventions, inspiration, and insight. In the book, Conversations with the Akashic Field, Dr. Cottrell offers you practical advice from the Akashic Field so you may live a life of peace and prosperity. Go to douglasjamescottrell.com and click on Shop. There you'll find books, meditation, and other spiritual advancement materials.
Who is God?
What's my purpose?
What do my dreams mean?
What are miracles?
What are spiritual abilities?
Was I in a past life?
Who is my soulmate?
What is meditation?
Are your thoughts racing around on what life is or how to live it? Slow down. Find answers in Dr. Douglas James Cottrell's book, Secrets of Life, now available at douglasjamescottrellstore.com or Amazon.
Here's a little book packed with over 350 simple inspirational messages that you can use on a daily basis. It's called Gems of Wisdom. If you follow these simple steps to reach the divine within, you'll change not only yourself, but the world. A must-read for the spiritual-minded person. Available now at douglasjamescottrell.com. Gems of Wisdom.
We understand people may have strong opinions that are different than our own. So join us and call in with questions and comments as we attempt to explore the unlimited human consciousness.
Welcome back to the Global Village Radio Show on Blog Talk Radio with your host, Dr. Douglas James Cottrell, and co-host, Doug Bentley, and special guest tonight, Robert Appel.
Welcome back, everyone, and for all of you listening around the world tomorrow in your own time zones, listening to the archive version of this show, welcome to the show as well. We appreciate your emails, info@douglasjamescottrell.com or visiting the website, www.douglasjamescottrell.com. Also, we have our International School of the Prophets.com, which is our spiritual website for our Zoom meetings, our Sunday Zoom meetings. If you'd like to attend one of our spiritual, practical Christian church services, you are welcome. The International School of the Prophets.com, and you'll find connections there. We're in association with the many mansion centers around the world. We're going to go to the calls tonight. We have some people standing by. Paul, who's up first?
We've got Carol in Chicago. He is standing by. And hello, Carol.
Hello. How is everybody? What I wanted to ask Robert is, what do you think is one of the main criticisms of this totalitarian empire? And the second thing I wanted to ask you is, do you think this history is important to teach kids in school? If so, why? So what is the main criticism of this totalitarian empire, do you think?
That's an interesting question. I can't find any. Everybody, all the stories from those traveling historians, all the legends say they were peaceful, happy people who got along with everybody. The only negative is that they obviously weren't prepared for an all-out attack from their neighbors. I guess you have to, you know, the old expression, even paranoids have enemies. I'm not trying to be funny, but that's what it comes down to. And as for the question of history, I think it's sad, but I also think it's deliberate. I think every effort is being made to separate us from our past. I think there are organizations and people at very high levels who are aware that Earth has been challenged many times, that mankind, we talked about on a previous show about the Younger Dryas event, that's Latin, it's named for a flower, but this is now accepted science. It wasn't accepted science 20 years ago, it's now accepted science today, that 10,500 years ago, which is also a date that appears in the Edgar Cayce readings, by the way, mankind experienced an event which is so horrible it qualified as an ELE, extinction level event. Only a small handful of us survived, and we are the result of that survival. A lot was lost. Most of what we had before that was lost. And apparently this is not the first time that's happened. The Earth is a crazy place. There's a lot of weird things going on. And there are people who don't want us to know that want us to believe that when we came out of the ELE 10,500 years ago, it was a fresh start. And these people are very skilled at maintaining the narrative that they want and having us believe only the things they want us to believe.
Because a lot of, you hear some people, they'll say it's a theory. Totalitarian empire is a theory. They have that out there. But what I was wondering, what do you think this, you know, what do you think this history will teach kids? You know, what is so important about this history that will teach kids? And do you think it should be taught in school?
Well, again, I'll repeat it. It sounds like a cliche, but, you know, a lot of cliches have truth in them. You can't know where you're going until you know where you've been. In fact, there's a really hit song that was done on that. Queen Latifah, I think, did that. If we are cut off from the knowledge of our real past, if we are cut off from the knowledge of, you know, everything mankind has done and the mistakes we made but the good things we learned, if we believe or are forced to believe that we're starting from scratch and we're being spoon-fed all this nonsense about history and archaeology and physics. I think I mentioned on this show once before that there's a lot of questions about the physics that they teach. I can tell you flat out, I'm not an expert, but I can tell you with 100% confidence that the latest breakthroughs in quantum physics are not compatible with the physics they're teaching in school. They don't tell you that. They tell you, oh, we have string theory and we figured this out and it's quantum and there's multiverse, but they don't tell you the two are not 100% compatible, and they haven't quite figured out how to mesh them in. Albert Einstein never could figure out a working model for gravity. Stephen Hawking, before he died, he wrote the theory of everything. He said his greatest lament was he hadn't figured out, again, how gravity worked. Wouldn't it be interesting if all those incredible accomplishments we see all around the world, the pyramids, all these stone blocks in Baalbek, South America, the giant temples, that these multi-ton Coral Castle in Florida, multi-ton constructions, wouldn't it be interesting if there is a theory of gravity which allows you to stop gravity or reverse gravity temporarily to move things incredibly heavy through the air? The oldest legends on Easter Island from the actual natives who live there are that the statues on Easter Island, which there's no known mechanism for how they were built or how they were moved, that they walked or floated all across the island from the quarry where they were quarried to the spot where they were. That's the working legend. So the importance, the answer to your question, again, it's too simple, but it really says everything. You can't know where you're going until you know where you've been. You can't judge what the future of mankind should be until you know what the future, what the past of mankind was.
And see, another thing, too, is that when your history teaches your foundation, you know, it is not yours to erase or destroy. It is here for you to learn from it. And I hear kids saying, well, why do we have to learn about President Lincoln? He's dead. Why are we learning about all these dead people? I said, because you have to have a foundation for your innovation that you're going to, you know, that you're going to create one day. Got to be innovative. You got to know these things, and that's what some of the problem is that kids think because somebody is dead or something doesn't exist anymore, they shouldn't learn it. But, you know.
I agree with you 1,000%. I agree with you 10,000%. And you need to have an education, all you kids out there, mathematics, to know the difference between 1,000% and 10,000%.
That's true. As you get older, you're going to learn that stuff too, Carol. I mean, right now in the world, there's lots of political back and forth about what should be taught in the schools and what should be omitted and maybe putting a spin on how things should be taught. I know one thing. If you tell a child, you cannot have this, you cannot go there, you cannot do that, the first thing they do when they get liberty, you know, when they're 12, 13, 14, 15, they go and they do what you told them they cannot do. If you told a child, you cannot have a motorcycle, you cannot ride a motorcycle, you're forbidden, as soon as they're 16, they buy a motorcycle and they ride it. If you tell them they cannot go to, let's say, Timbuktu, they got to stay away from Timbuktu, it's a terrible place, don't go there, first thing they do is they go there to find out themselves. And people in broken families, when mommy's telling dad about daddy or daddy's telling about mommy bad stories, the first thing the kids do when they get to be 15 or 16, they go to the other parent and they want to know, how come you never came over to see us and what's going on and we heard you're really bad? And then the kids find out that the parent that they've been living with has been deceiving them. Well, then they go, they live with their estranged parent. Because they're upset at the one that's been lying to them, and then they find that mommy or daddy that they were told was a monster is really not a bad person. They love them. They do exactly the opposite. So what we're hearing now about these opinions about what not to teach in school, give me a break. People, have you not heard about Google? Have you not heard about Internet? Those kids, 7, 8 years, 9, they're going to go on Google. They're going to find out what you say, do not do. Do not look at this. And it's the same thing, I think, as we go through history. Those people who have attempted to deny us, it's only in the short term. Tesla is now a hero. He's more famous in death than he is and was in life, because now his principles are being explored. People are attempting to look at anti-gravity, combining magnetism and electricity, and what else is magnetism, electricity, and what else?
Gravity.
Yeah. So people are coming to understand that. But back in the day, as Robert said, these people who were greedy tried to prevent him from providing free power. What would it have been like if all everybody in the world had free electricity? Right? What would it, how much different would the world be? You got another question for Robert?
How you can remember from one of your books, it's called GEM. GEM is gravity, electricity, and magnetism. That's how you will remember those three that Tesla was talking about. GEM,
yeah, I did remember. I just had a little bit of brain.
I know, but what I'm saying is that's
hesitation.
How I remember gravity, electricity, and magnetism. GEM from one of your books that you have on sale called, you know, Your Words of Wisdom book.
Yeah, and people can get that at douglasjamescottrell.com. Thank you for the plug, Carol. Very good. Okay. So you have another question for Robert?
Yes, my thing about it, I was thinking about, I said, do you think that Tesla stumbled upon or knew about the Tartarian Empire? Was there any evidence?
I've never come across any indication. What I have come across is the sense that he was highly intuitive and had incredible mental skills. So he had access. He could probably do somewhat consciously what people do, you know, with great effort or training now. Now, the stories about him say that he could create a machine in his mind and then let the machine run for an hour or two. When he got back to the picture of the machine, he'd see where the weaknesses were. That is something that many people said about him. So I have no indication about what you're saying, but he was an exceptional individual who did not deserve what happened to him.
Well, maybe he was a reincarnation of somebody from the Tartarian Empire. Who knows?
Could be.
Sure it was. He could well. But, you know, Robert, I mean, logic dictates. He was an intelligent man. He was well-read. He was quite intuitive. Why not? Would he give any on the record that he would investigate, you know, fabled cities like Atlantis, or did he look at history and Greek mythology and things like that? Did he wonder about the configurations of buildings? Probably not a whole lot was said about that, but I'm sure he would have. You and I would. We do, right? It's logical that he would do that.
Absolutely.
And getting back to that criticism, but wouldn't one of the criticism be, Robert, that many are considering it a theory? You know, many people consider it a theory. That is, you know, it's not real, it's a hoax. Wouldn't that be one of the criticisms of it?
You mean but that people consider it a hoax today?
Mm-hmm.
Well, but yeah, but at the time, that's not fair to the poor Tartarians who lost everything. At the time, it wasn't a myth. It was reality. As I say, these guys that would travel with their map making skills and interview, it was as real as the McDonald's in the corner. And it wasn't a theory then.
There we go. Thank you very much for your questions, Carol. We were just going to go to New York, but it looks like they dropped the call here. If you're interested in the 914, call us back and we'll get you back on the air. Let's take another quick break before we get another 15 minutes until the show is over. And you're listening to Robert Appel, and he's giving us some secrets of the ancient Tartaria Empire and how that was sort of covered up, sort of absorbed, and all the power and it was kind of gutted, if you will, by the Russians, who took away all their amazing devices, or so the story goes. We'll be right back after this short break.
One of the most poignant topics of discussion in today's world is the evidence of earthly changes and what began as what the media called global warming. Did you know our Global Village host wrote the most detailed predictive book about the future of our planet? The New Earth is a book that drills down to specific events, many of which have already come true, but much more than severe weather patterns, seismic eruptions, the New Earth tells us how to prepare and understand how societies and governments will be forced to accommodate these future events. Originally published as The New Renaissance, the updated manuscript is one of Dr. Douglas Cottrell's best-selling books. Pole shift, coastal and inland changes, volcanoes and earthquakes, rising temperatures, specific landmass changes, healing our emotional health during these changes, and so much more. Go to DouglasJamesCottrellStore.com. That's DouglasJamesCottrellStore.com for immediate access to your printed copy of The New Earth.
You think about you and your family's health every minute, every day, not just when sick. We believe healthcare should bring results and rejuvenate the body. That's why Dr. Douglas James Cottrell compiled some of his best tips from his readings into a book, The Complete New Age Health Guide, Volume 1. From nutrition, anti-aging, and skincare to serious disorders and diseases like autism, PTSD, and cancer. Find out more at DouglasJamesCottrellStore.com or buy a copy on Amazon today.
Did you know that Dr. Douglas Cottrell has several other weekly channels where you can participate? Check out his Sunday International Spiritual Healing Service on Zoom, plus a Wednesday night Zoom community gathering. And you might also enjoy the Wake Up Podcast, exploring human consciousness, awareness, and intuition with Dr. Douglas and co-host Les Hubert. Just go to DouglasJamesCottrell.com and message us on the contact page to add your name to the Zoom links of your choice. You're listening to the Global Village International Radio Show with your host, Dr. Douglas James Cottrell. Call in and ask a question about tonight's topic at area code 718-766-4421. That's 718-766-4421. Now, once again, here's Dr. Douglas James Cottrell.
Well, as we head towards the last few minutes of the show, my friends, we've had a very interesting wide view of ancient times, especially this amazing continent or nation that stretched from France to China to Japan, and I guess maybe even into Africa and other places, certainly into Russia and what is some of the modern day countries now in this vast array have likewise linked their name to their historical beginnings. But whatever happened to them? What happened to this amazing civilization? Just like all civilizations who seem to get to power, they become civilized, they become cultured, they have power, the population is doing well, there's no poverty, there's no starvation, their civilization seems to be well advanced. And they also have power devices or free power devices. Wouldn't it be wonderful if it's available? And we know it's coming. We can see on the little social media, these little gizmos that light up light bulbs now. And we can see that this free power is available. What if what we're talking about tonight is a matter of just one step away? Some philanthropic person is going to come forward and develop these devices that can be put in our homes and give us free power. Wouldn't that be amazing? We need it, certainly. I'm predicting higher food prices, extremely higher food prices coming in the very short future. So if you have an extra couple of plastic containers and you want to stock up on rice or grain or baking powder and things like that, please do so. The prices are going to go up. And so a lot of other things that we've been predicting in my book, they're now coming about. But anyway, just as an offhanded prediction tonight, that the world is moving towards hyperinflation, but more exactly, the food prices are going to go up, and that's going to affect each and every one of us. So take care. to the words of the wise. To those people who have ears, let them hear. Paul, we got a couple more calls that want to squeeze in a question or two with Robert here tonight.
No, Douglas, I think we've got a lot of people who are listening right now.
I got to see somebody in the 303 here that is on the screen. Oh, everybody's
listening.
Well,
I'll go ahead and if you'd like.
And the 917's back. Here we go.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's see who we've got in the 303 area code. Hello, are you calling to Dr. Douglas? Talk to Dr. Douglas on the air?
No,
oh, Robert.
Just listening.
Just okay. Listening.
Where is the 303? What state's that? Oh, gone. 917?
Hello, okay. You're calling to talk to Dr. Douglas on the air?
No.
Okay. Just listening.
I'm also just listening.
Okay, this is great. We love it. Direct line to listen to Robert. So, Robert, in the next couple of minutes, before the show's going to end here in about 10 minutes or less, in a summary, where do you think we should look? I mean, should we go back? I'm kind of opening up the door here, but you've mentioned a few times people will check this out. Where can they find out more about this amazing place? Or should we just look for more of their power devices or their influence on the world?
You're going to have trouble, I think, with defining their influence because this is such a new topic. I could say 20 years ago, there was almost no information on this, but it's because of the nature of the internet and the people that it encourages that you're seeing more and more material. I would say you can start with Google, although Google is very, very, very heavily censored. They admit it. They don't apologize for it. They have their own mission. If start with YouTube, do research on YouTube, type in Tartaria, and see where you go from there. You can also go to DuckDuckGo and some of the other search engines, which are not as manipulated. But I would say you could easily find 30 really high-quality videos in about 10 minutes. And all of them were within the last 4 or 5 years. Some of them have photos, hours of beautiful photos and pictures of strange buildings with strange antenna and beautiful inside of churches with strange glass works hanging. And it's just absolutely phenomenal. It makes you think twice. Lots of pictures of the mud flood available online where you'll see real buildings where the entrance is through the second floor because the first floor is sunk into the ground. Just really, really incredible stuff.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's because it's from the feedback we're getting here, it's intriguing people. Certainly, it begs to be researched, and it's kind of, it's filling in the blanks that there has been some resistance to talking about those weird and wacky things of the past that now seem to be not so weird and wacky. I was thinking all the way through the show tonight when you were talking about antennas on the buildings. There is a weird and wacky thing now, but electrifying your garden, and basically it's taking a 10 or 12 inch piece of copper pipe and wrapping a copper wire around it, sort of, gently spiraling up, and then sticking a six, eight inch piece on top of the pipe straight up. And when you were talking about the antenna on the buildings, I was thinking, maybe there's something to this gardening, because the reports are that when you do this, you put a piece of copper pipe with spiral wire on it, and you wrap it tight on the top, and you have a vertical antenna. Apparently, the plants in very short order double in size. Yes, I am going to try this. I have some lagging strawberry plants that I'm going to tomorrow give this a try. But I'm wondering, is it possible just by doing that we could pull electricity out of the air, just on a vertical, buildings?
What do you think static electricity is? Where did that come from?
Exactly.
It's everywhere. Electricity is the essence of, first of all, we don't know what it is. John Keeley, we talked about before, and I told the story before about how this amazing man who had no university or advanced education came up on his own with the idea that electricity, magnetism, and gravity were the same force but different aspects. And he built a machine which he not only did what he was supposed to do, but he was so sure he had solved the problem, he called a press conference with reporters from all the majors. This is in 1890-something, mid-1890s. He called a press conference in New York with reporters from all the major newspapers and magazines around the world flying into New York, where in his laboratory he had knocked out a wall because there was no doors or elevators that would accommodate it. And with the hole in the wall, he had a locomotive engine lifted in to his lab on the linoleum floor. When all the reporters were there, he turned on a switch. There was a humming noise. Remember, this is the man who said he'd figured out electricity, gravity, and magnetism. And with the machine on and the humming noise going, he pushed the locomotive engine around the room with the finger of one hand. It didn't leave any marks on the tile of his laboratory floor. This is all recorded. It's all in the history books. Unfortunately, what is also recorded in the history books is that it was so successful, it was such a success, it was so impressive to these guys who were right there in the room, that the financiers immediately said, we're going to form a public corporation, you're going to mass produce this, it's going to change the world, and the machines would not work, that he mass produced would not work. And he could not explain why they did not work, and he was considered retroactively a fraud, and I think he died in prison. And he was so angry with the world, he burnt all his notes. The only record we have of the mechanics of what he did was his girlfriend, who loved him and wrote a whole book about his life, and I have a copy somewhere in the basement. I got it from one of the big libraries, and she explained his background and what he had figured out. My own theory on Keeley, which I stick to this day, is that like the priests of old working with these forces, which are universal forces, magnetism, gravity, he had not understood. The one thing he didn't understand was he had become part of the circuit. Whatever his personal frequency was, he was part of the circuit, and as long as he was operating the machine, it worked. If somebody else operated the machine, it did not work, and he hadn't overcome that. Just my opinion. But this frequency, this energy, electricity is the basis of everything. It makes things move. Whatever it is, it keeps the world going. And if it is, in fact, as Keeley said, if it is the same force that is also gravity and magnetism, well, that's everything. You've now covered the entire EM electromagnetic spectrum. So how can you not include everything there? So this is the ultimate answer to the ultimate question. We just got to figure it out and regain it. Apparently we had it before.
Well, I believe those devices are coming back. I see on the social media people wrapping copper wire around plastic pipe, putting magnets on either side of the windings, and lead wires to a light bulb that lights up. And there's no moving parts, just the copper wire and magnetism. I was doing a little study, and I found that, you know, the way a motor or a generator works is they put an armature inside and it spins around, and the magnets, depending on the size of the magnets on the armature, they create electron flow, or they create electricity. And depending on the coil of the wire, the more wire, it creates more voltage or more electricity, and the size of the magnets creates more. The only thing is the movement. And I'm thinking, okay, maybe there's electricity in these magnetic flows and the copper wire and the electricity. Remember, electricity is invisible. The copper wires in the windings of motors and generators, they don't diminish. They just continue the same size. The only thing that's different is that in electric motors and generators, there's this armature that's moving. Maybe that, if it's extracted and it's reversed, where the magnets are on the outside and the coiled wire, copper wire on the inside, maybe that's the secret to having gigantic refrigerator size of these magnet copper wire electrical devices. Maybe. And I've read a little bit that there is such a thing out there that was able to power a whole house, and it was the size of a refrigerator. But we're on the way. There's too many of these things coming out. The truth is coming out. It's like, you know, there are three things you cannot hide: the sun, the moon, and the truth. And your comments tonight are very appropriate, Robert. You're exposing, I guess, people, curious people listening now are maybe going to have a look at this in a different way. I like the idea of having
too soon.
Yeah, I like the idea of having these antennas on the buildings. I'll let you know, folks, how my garden does. I'm going to do this tomorrow, and we'll see if this time next week, if the strawberries are like bursting at the seams, or at least there's a couple of improvements, I'll let you know. It's great to have you on the show tonight. Thank you very much for coming on, Robert, and once again educating us and giving us some really great information about this ancient Tataria Empire. You know, there's got to be more coming for us. Too many people interested in finding out what happened. Like all things, there's an amazing truth to how the people on the earth succeeded in their civilization. We certainly need it now, as you're right. Doug, welcome, or not welcome, but thank you for being on the show and helping co-host tonight. It's great to have you on. Let's give Robert the last comment. Last word, Robert.
The world is going to become very challenging, I think, in the next couple of years. Older guys, you know, we've done what we've done. I think younger people have an obligation to dig into it and try and find answers that are not being given to them by traditional sources. I think, especially if you have a family, there's a burden on you to go digging a bit deeper than what the mainstream media and the TV shows and all these characters tell you, because they're not telling you everything.
I think you nailed it right there. You know, thank you, Doug. You were going to say something just there a moment ago.
I was just, not to be an alarmist, but it's so easy to hide information, to mislead people. And one of my concerns is that so much information now is digital. That means it's very easy to hide and very easy to change. That's not to be alarmist, but that's a concern of mine. So.
Well, at the same time, that same digital force is now able to allow us to do all kinds of research on our own. And so, you know, like fire, it has a good and a dark side to it. But, yeah, well said, Douglas. Here we go. We implore you, my friends, to do your own research. Don't let somebody else's opinion deter you from taking a look at something that might intuitively make sense to you. And looking back, as Robert has said, we need to look back in order to know where we're going. I want to thank everybody for listening to our show tonight and letting us come into your homes, and we hope we've been entertaining, and we thank you for helping to make our show possible. I want to thank our producer, Paul Hughes, who's done an excellent job to put the show together tonight and whose timeless efforts are helping Global Village Radio Show go worldwide. We're really helpful, and thank you to, really a lot of gratitude to Paul on that, and of course to my co-host, Doug Bentley, and our special guest tonight, Robert Appel. I want to thank everybody. Please go to the website, douglasjamescultural.com. for more information, and sign up, and you'll get email updates on when this show is available and the special guests that we'll be having in the near future. So take care, my friends. We're looking forward to seeing you here in the very near future. God bless you, one and all. May God grant you all your prayers. Take care and good night. God bless, and see you here next week.
Thanks for listening to the Global Village Online Radio Show with your host, Dr. Douglas James Cottrell, and co-host, Doug Bentley. Brought to you by MindPro Publications and Productions, a division of Douglas James Cottrell & Associates, Incorporated. Copyright 2023, Douglas James Cottrell. No part of this broadcast audio may be reproduced in whole or in part without expressed written permission.